Everyone. Today reading from Joshua 2 verses 1 to 7. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. "Go, look over the land," he said, "especially Jericho." So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land." So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab: "Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from." At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. "I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them." But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut.
You can choose your friends, but you sure can't choose your family. And they're still kin to you no matter whether you acknowledge them or not. And it makes you look right silly when you don't. And that line is from Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. We're in the season of Advent and we're looking at some characters in Jesus' family tree along with the themes of Advent. And as you can see on the screen, today's theme is faith. And as you can tell from our Bible readings today, today's character is Rahab. And we're not going to read Matthew chapter 1 every week, and not just because Nat did such a good job last week, but verse 5 says, "Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab." Now, at the time Matthew was writing his gospel, usually only men were included in genealogies. But Matthew unexpectedly includes five women in the genealogy of Jesus. Now, if Matthew wanted to evoke the history of Israel in a general way, he could have named matriarchs of Israel such as Sarah, Rebecca, Leah, or Rachel. Or if he wanted to remind us of supernatural births as a prelude to Mary's, he could cite Sarah, Rebecca, or Rachel, whose wombs God had opened. Instead, he names four women before he gets to Mary, and their primary link is their Gentile ancestry. There's Tamar of Canaan, Rahab of Jericho, Ruth the Moabite, and the ex-wife of Uriah the Hittite. And in the world divided by races and cultures, an interracial marriage can appear scandalous or an act of treachery. And most Jewish people regarded genealogies as important to establish the purity of their lineage. But it is a mixed nature of Jesus' lineage that Matthew purposely highlights. But it's not just their cultural heritage that makes their stories interesting. And today we're just going to look at Rahab out of those women. And she first makes an appearance in the biblical story in Joshua chapter 2, which Joz just read the first part of to us. And this chapter employs irony, humour, and folkloric qualities to create an irresistible plot in which a prostitute outsmarts two groups of men in order to preserve herself and her family during the Israelite attack on Jericho. Now, the story has suspense, sexual innuendo, and an underdog who triumphs. I mean, everything a modern audience expects in a great story. Around 2 months ago, we began a series on Exodus, where Moses leads the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt. And the book of Joshua takes up the story from the end of Deuteronomy, where the Israelites are poised on the edge of their promised land. Moses, their leader, has died, and Joshua succeeds him as the person designated by God to take the Israelites into the land. But there is only the River Jordan to cross. God has promised the land will be the Israelites, and he promises multiple times to Joshua words like this: "I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged." But for some reason, Joshua sends two spies to look over the land, and especially Jericho. And the two spies head over and lodge in the house of a prostitute named Rahab. The king of Jericho finds out that there are Israelite spies in the land, and that they have stopped at this house of Rahab. And so he sends a message to her demanding that the spies be brought out. But Rahab has hidden the two spies and gives false information that sends the king's posse on a wild goose chase. In the original language, there are a few innuendos that might make us good Christians blush. It's good that the children have gone out to their program. And it's good that Joz has just turned 18, so you can read that story for us. But at the time of Jesus and before the time of Jesus, not a lot of people could read. And so one person would have read the story while a lot of people would have sat and listened. And hearing verse 1 in the original Hebrew would have immediately caused listeners to sit up or cover their children's ears or look for a way to walk out without making it look obvious. And we'll only quickly mention this, but there are three things in the second half of verse 1 that make our modern soap operas look rather tame. First, Rahab's name means to open or to be wide and spacious. She is a prostitute, and the text says how these spies entered and stayed at her house. Now, we'll never know what exactly happened in that house, but the Hebrew text can be read to imply that these two Israelite spies were customers of Rahab. And verse 4 also reads this way. I mean, it really is an attention-grabbing way of opening this part of the story. But what is clear is that Rahab leads the king's representatives to believe they were her clients, and therefore gains an advantage over the king. And as a result, she also gains an advantage over the spies, because as soon as the king's men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of Jordan, the city gate is shut and the two spies are trapped. Although Rahab is the sort of woman that we don't want to know more about, what happens next reveals a lot about who she is and who she is becoming. She goes up to the roof where the two spies are hiding and says this, "I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." And this sure sign turns out to be a red rope hanging in her window. And then Rahab ends up marrying Salmon of the tribe of Judah, and they have a son called Boaz, and that's how it fits in with Matthew chapter 1. I mean, all's well that ends well. I mean, it's not exactly a fairy tale ending because this was a real event in history, not a fairy tale. But we've got a rough character who hides the good guys of the story and misleads the king's men. Then she confesses her faith in God and pleads for safety for herself and her family when the city is attacked. When the crimson cord is used, resulting in Rahab joining God's people, the Israelites, through marriage. And so in one way, it's fair enough that when the writer of Hebrews gets to their explanation of that faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see, they then give a list of such faith in actions by ancients that we hear names and stories of. There's Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Rahab. But when the name Rahab comes up, so does her shameful profession. It says, by faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And as I said last week, first century people hearing all these names that Matthew lists in the genealogy of Jesus would recall stories and what sort of people they were. Now, if you've done a bit of research into your family tree, you might have uncovered some things about the past. Some interesting, but maybe some bland. And many years ago, my grandpa had begun to trace the family of the Thompson side back, although it was mostly names and dates and nothing all that interesting. But sometimes it also find professions of these people. And I remember how excited he'd get when he traced one more generation back, but then also get frustrated that so much of their lives and their stories were lost to history. And we'd never know what sort of people they were and why they had travelled to a different town than their previous ancestors and so on. But just before he died a few years ago, my grandpa had confirmed that we had a relative called James Thompson, born in 1736, who worked in haberdashery in Yorkshire. And we had a lot of questions, but no answers. Did he work simply in this field, or did he own a shop? Why did he choose to work in that field, and why did he travel many miles, or kilometres, as we would say, away from his family once we've traced back to 1698 and found a Henry George Thompson, which is quite funny because we found that out after my son was born. Who's Henry George Thompson? To first century Jews, their family history was mostly already known, particularly those who could trace their heritage in the Hebrew scriptures, and that includes Jesus. Here is God coming down to us, choosing to be a part of this family that has the prostitute Rahab in their genealogy. As Jesus grew up and learned of great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother Rahab, then at some point connecting his mission sent by his father, he would have seen the importance of God's hand in history and how he uses people from all walks of life. And the glory and goodness of God can be seen if one is truly open to realizing it. People would have worked out that Rahab fit somewhere in the family tree of Jesus, but in naming a woman like Rahab, Matthew is reminding his readers of something else from the past that is starting to change with the coming of Jesus, the Messiah. For Rahab was the victim of an economic system in which women had no opportunities to earn a living. Women like her sometimes found themselves on the edge of life, with slavery or prostitution their only options. But Jesus came to show us who God is, to show us the love of the Father. And one way he did that was through his acceptance of outsiders. And women were certainly outsiders, and Jesus' approach to women was revolutionary. If you have a past that you're not proud of, don't despair. God's grace is sufficient to transform a bad reputation into a worthy one. And if you feel that you are an outsider, unloved and unwanted, Jesus has come to welcome you and to love you. All that is required is faith. Faith in Jesus Christ, who came through the lineage of a prostitute. Jesus Christ, who has paved the way through his faithfulness to his mission from his Father, to come into the world to save sinners and to welcome them into the family of God. And the character of Rahab invites admiration and sympathy. I mean, she is equal among other great Old Testament names only by faith. Here is an outsider, a person of disgraceful character, but she is included in the family of God, both literally and by faith. And as Hebrews goes on to say in chapter 12, it is Jesus who is the pioneer and perfecter of faith. We are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, but it is Jesus alone who paved the path of faith. I don't know if you've done enough research into your family history or heard stories, but Rahab is part of Jesus' family tree. And someone this week was sharing how one of their ancestors had played a part in one of the many massacres of Aboriginal people, and how even though it was generations ago and they themselves didn't play a part, they still felt very sick that someone in their family line did such a thing. As that line again says, you can choose your friends, but you sure can't choose your family. And they're still kin to you no matter whether you acknowledge them or not. And it makes you look right silly when you don't. And that line is referring to living family, but it also applies to those in our family trees. Jesus would have been well aware that he was related to someone like Rahab. Although later the writer of Hebrews lists Rahab in the great line of faith, her life as a deceiving prostitute could not be ignored because it reminds us of God's grace. It reminds us that faith is confidence in what we hope for, and assurance about what we do not see. Because faith is not certainty. We walk by faith, not by sight. And you can imagine as she tied that crimson cord to her bedroom window, we see that Rahab was walking by faith. She's an example of this, even though she did not yet know personally the God of Israel. She might have had deceptive intentions to begin with, for she probably thought that tricking the king's men and the two spies meant that she had all the power. But she also knew that there was one with greater power. As Hebrew tells us, she had faith because she welcomed the spies. Rahab had heard the story of what God had done for his people, and faith was alive in her heart. And in the letter of James, he also refers to Rahab by saying that was not even Rahab considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction? As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. Rahab, the sinful woman, turned to God in faith and put that faith into action. We must keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, the one who pioneered the way, opened up the course, and brought it to successful completion. And our task is to follow in his steps by faith in action. And this is only possible with God's help. There is a poem from the 5th century, and I'll pronounce this incorrectly for those who know how to pronounce it, but it is called A Solus Artis Cardine by Sir Julius. It recounts Jesus' life from his birth all the way to his resurrection. And it's very long, and its 23 verses begin with each consecutive letter of the Latin alphabet. And it's often used in services at Christmas time. And it's been translated into English a few times over history. But recently, someone managed to translate it so that each verse begins with a letter of the English alphabet. And the final two verses, Y and Z, are this. Ye faithful, come and let us sing with sweetest hymns Christ's victory, who sold for silver sacking hell, brought us back from sin's penalty. Zealous for blood, the serpent's head and lion's mouth devouring gods, only begotten underfoot, has crushed and back to heaven trod. This speaks of Jesus, the faithful one, the firstborn from among the dead, the ruler over the kings of the earth, the one who calls the faithful to come and worship him, because he is the one who was born of a virgin, lived among us, dwelt among us, was betrayed, crucified, and risen. The one who crushed the serpent and brought us back from sin's penalty. The one who was crucified on a cross, hanging, drenched in blood, just like the crimson cord was hanging on Rahab's window. Just like Rahab and her family were saved from certain death, we too are saved from certain death because of the one who is the pioneer and perfecter of faith, Jesus Christ, the Lord. Amen. No matter who you are, no matter what you have done, no matter what your family history might have in it, Jesus invites you. Jesus invites all of us to see what Rahab saw, that the Lord our God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Jesus invites us to join the story of God, to join all these great names of faith, to join the worldwide family of God. Whether that's for the first time or not, we are called to daily take up our crosses and follow Jesus as he invites us. He says, "Come all you who are weary, who are tired, who are beaten down or beat up. Come all you faithful, joyful, and triumphant. Come to Bethlehem and behold the one born, the King of Angels."